I'm just going to ask you a few questions. There's no children here, so you have to be, well, oh, Rebecca's here. Just spotted you. That's because I wasn't watching properly. No glasses. I don't know if all of you would know these things, but I'm going to ask you, see if you know, put up your hand if you know, what is a Yorkshire pudding? Yeah, you know, what was it, Rebecca? It's a food. Do you know what it's made of? No? No? Egg?
Egg and white flour.
Egg and flour, pinch of salt. Yep, that's it. It's made exactly the same way as a pancake, except the batter, when you make it up with flour and egg, perhaps a little bit of milk, a little bit of salt, you put some hot fat into the oven and you pour the batter in and it should all puff up. And in Yorkshire, it is eaten, it was designed in Yorkshire really, Yorkshire pudding, name comes from there, to pad out a dinner. So when there was, meat was expensive and there wasn't much food to put on the table, they would cook lots of Yorkshire pudding and put it on people's plates. Often in Yorkshire they would serve it before they served the meat and the vegetables, perhaps with a bit of gravy, and that would fill people up a little bit so they didn't need quite as much of the meat and the gravy that people couldn't afford. Some people in Yorkshire, and this includes my nephew's wife, whose family originated in Yorkshire, some people will have their Yorkshire pudding with golden syrup on it. Believe me, it's quite nice. Some people, but most of them have it with meat and gravy. Right, what is toad in the hole? Toad in the hole. Jedediah knows. Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly it. You make your Yorkshire pudding in a big basin this time rather than little individual ones, and you put sausages in it, and it all cooks together in the oven, and the batter puffs up around the sausages. So it's nothing to do with toads. Toad in the hole is sausages and Yorkshire pudding. Right, this is a hard one. Who knows what singing hinny is? Singing hinny. Sorry? Bubble and squeak is a very good guess, but it's wrong. No? Singing hinny is a little scone or scone made of flour and a little bit of ground rice and sugar and currants and fat, and it's cooked on the top of the stove in like a heavy-based frying pan that, depending where you come from, is either called a girdle or a griddle. And it's cooked on the top very quickly, and when it cooks, it makes a whistling singing sound because it's got ground rice in it. Now, hinny is an old, old, old name for a young girl up in the northeast of the country. So the idea is, when you cook this little scone on the top, it whistles and sings like a young girl might whistle and sing. So it's really nice to eat, especially with a bit of butter on top. That's a singing hinny. What about parkin? P-A-R-K-I-N. Parkin. Rebecca knows that one, do you? No, you've got to have a G on it for that, for parking. Park in. Cake, yep. It's very like a ginger cake. It was a good guess, Rebecca, because it's spelt nearly the same. It's like a ginger cake, except it's also got treacle and oatmeal and brown sugar, and you bake it and then you keep it for a few days, and then it gets nice and tasty before you eat it. Usually, often it's called Yorkshire parkin, but it's cooked in other, comes from other places too. Right, the last one, black bun. Who knows what black bun is? It is also sometimes called Scotch bun, if that helps. No? Black bun is a kind of dryish fruit cake, totally encased in pastry. So the pastry is all on the outside and the fruit cake is in the inside. And when you cut open, it's all dark, really dark fruit cake inside with pastry on the outside. Now, all of those are old-fashioned regional recipes from different parts of England and black bun from Scotland. But as we eat more generally, we eat all sorts of different things and more widely produced foods, the regional specialities are gradually fading away. Does anybody know what a Devon split is? See, that one's going as well. And that's a sweet bread bun with jam and cream in it. Really, really tasty. Like my sweet things. These things are gradually fading away as we tend to eat more general things right across the country. But people have still their own preferred things they like to eat. And most people really enjoy the foods, the tastes, the recipes that they've grown up with. Not all of them, perhaps, because when my grandma cooked cabbage, she boiled it for several hours so that it was soggy and flavourless and the water was as green as the vegetable was. Not everything from childhood, but lots of us enjoy the tastes that we grow up with, the things that we are used to eating from when we're young, and we like those kind of things, even if our tastes in food become quite wide-ranging eventually. My taste of childhood, actually, is bottled pears off our own pear tree, bottled at home, and baked egg custard, which probably some of you have never had. You might have had a little custard tart, but the baked egg custard is slightly different to the egg custard tart. But some of these things are going. And we have to change with time, don't we? And food changes as much as anything else does. Change can be difficult. It can be challenging. There are all sorts of changes that can be challenging. Moving home can be challenging. And when I think of our church family now, we've got quite a few people in our church family who've not only had to move home, they've had to move country. Who was born in a different country? And England and England, Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland don't count. Who was born in a different country? Look, quite a few of us were born in different countries. If you're born in a different country, some of you were very young when you came here, but if you're born in a different country, you've got to make a big adjustment, haven't you? Particularly if you come to the UK, because in the UK we can have 4 different seasons of weather in one day. And people don't realise that when they move to the UK. They don't realise that it can snow in the morning and be sunny at lunchtime and rain in the afternoon and be windy at night. They don't know that. That's one of the things they never tell you about the UK. But it can be challenging, can't it? When you move home anywhere, and particularly to a new country. It can be challenging when you have to change schools. I can remember the challenge of changing school, of moving up to my senior school. Now, I was only 11, but I can remember it very, very clearly. It was very daunting, very worrying, moving to senior school from primary school. My senior and primary schools were quite separate. I had an infant and junior school in one place, the same place where Hannah now works, and the same school that Malcolm went to a few years before me. Then I moved to a different senior school. And senior school, I can remember being very worried about going to senior school, but worried about all sorts of things about senior school. Worried about all the new people, because I wouldn't know anybody. Worried about changing classes and having to find my way from one classroom to lots of different classrooms. About encountering subjects I didn't know. About wearing a uniform every day. How learning to tie a tie. Actually, I already knew because I did it in Girls' Brigade. But learning to tie a tie and all those kind of things that you had to learn when you went to high school. Change is difficult. Change is difficult in all sorts of ways and all sorts of things. It changes very difficult when somebody dies who you're close to, who you care about, whoever it might be, whether it's a member of your family or a close friend. It brings change, and that's difficult. Change is difficult when circumstances change, when everything is different. But even when things change, Jesus promises to be with us. If changes are exciting or changes are unsettling, Jesus promises to be with us. And in John 13, he says this to his disciples. He says, "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." Simon Peter asked him, "Lord, where are you going?" Because Jesus had said he was going to be leaving them. And Jesus replied, "Where I am going, you cannot follow now, but you will follow later." Peter asked, "Lord, why can't I follow you now? I will lay down my life for you." Then Jesus answered, "Will you really lay down your life for me? Very truly I tell you, before the rooster crows, you will disown me 3 times. There was change ahead for those disciples. And Peter said to his Lord, he said, "Where are you going? Why can't I follow you now?" And Jesus said to comfort them, "I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you." In other words, I won't leave you all alone to cope by yourselves. I will help you. The Advocate, the Holy Spirit, will come and will teach you all things and will remind you of everything I have said to you. Jesus, of course, was known by his disciples as the Rabbi, the teacher. And Jesus says, the Holy Spirit, the Advocate, will teach you. He will carry on my work in you and through you. You will not be alone. Well, change did come. It came in spades for his disciples. But Jesus did not leave them alone. First, he came to them. And then he left them with the Holy Spirit to be their guide. And his promise to us is, "I will not leave you alone." Whatever life holds, if things are changing or if they're staying the same, Jesus says, "I will be with you." Right, this picture coming up here now is a picture of one of the cottages where my mum and her grandmother lived when she was a little girl. Until she was 11 years old and they moved into the city, my mum and her younger brothers lived with my grandmother and my grandfather in a farm cottage just like this. This one, I think, is her granny's cottage, my great-granny's cottage. But they were all pretty much the same. Very small farm cottages. Very simple. They had no running water. You had to go outside, turn on a tap outside and fill your kettle or your pail for running water. They had no toilets indoors. You had to go out to a separate building to the toilets, and that wasn't mains drainage. But it was a place that was very special to my mum. The only heating it had was from a coal fire, and the smoke went up through the chimney and heated the sleeping area that was in the little attic above. They were very small and they were very limited, but this was a place. And the woods that it stood in, called the Dean, this was a place my mum wanted to go back to all her life. In fact, the lady in the spotted dress is my mum, when she was young, before, long, long before I was born. And she's there with a friend of hers called Teresa, and they've gone to visit those cottages. My dad is taking the photograph. My mum always wanted to go back there. She went back all through her youth. And when she moved south to live in London and to go to training at Old Church Hospital, as it then was, in Romford, she missed her home. She always wanted to go back. Not just to see the people, all that was important to her, but back to the place that she knew and loved, and it meant so much to her. She was held by what's past. The motto of my college, Spurgeon's College, is written in Latin, but what it means is, I hold and I am being held. Held can be two things, can't it? You can be held by something, you can be held by somebody, held in somebody's arms, held as in supported by somebody, But you can also be held back by things. And sometimes we are held back by what is in our past. We are prevented from moving forward by the things that should be anchors to us, that should be providing stability for us, but instead are holding us back. Sometimes we are held back by what is past, by childhood memories, both good and bad ones, by people, by places, sometimes by things that we can't forget, that we've done or said or experienced. Peter, after Jesus' resurrection, in spite of being among one of the first people to see him risen from the dead, despite the fact that the angels said to the women, tell his disciples and Peter that he has risen, despite of all this, Peter was being held back, held in the grip of the past, and especially in the grip of his own failure. Peter had been so sure of himself, hadn't he? I will go with you anywhere, Lord. I will die with you, Lord. I will do whatever you want. I love you, Lord. I will never leave you. I will never abandon you. I am with you to the bitter end. And there he was on the night of Jesus' arrest. Somebody said, you're one of those disciples who were with Jesus. And suddenly he was overwhelmed with fear. Suddenly he thought, I could be arrested as well. What will happen if I'm arrested and put to death? What will happen? And he said, no, I'm not one of those. And again he was challenged. You are one of them, aren't you? You're one of his disciples. No, I'm not, he said. And the third time somebody said to him, I know you. You're one of Jesus' disciples. I'm not, he said. Three times. And that guilt, that shame of what he'd said in the past, even after Jesus was risen from the dead, even though Jesus had warned him this was what he would do, after the resurrection, was holding him in his grip. His past, his guilt, his shame, holding him. Because it was his failure. And Peter needed to be released. He needed to know the power of love. Love is an amazing thing. It can change, it can transform a person, a place, a situation. It can strengthen, it can enable. Sometimes you see people who, when they are loved, become totally different. People who have struggled and found things difficult. And when they know that they are really loved, they are transformed. I've seen it particularly in dogs, because that's my area of interest. I've seen dogs who were frightened, who were timid, who had been lost. I've seen it in my own dogs, having had three dogs who came out of the rescue home. And I've seen the change that being loved and being secure can make to them. I've seen the difference in Penny, who, when I first got her, would cry every time I went out of her sight. She'd go, set up a cry. And I've seen the change in her. She's become secure. And it's the power of love. Jesus met Peter again and again after the resurrection. And it seemed as if things were the same between them. But they weren't. All the time, Peter was holding back, hurting inside by his own actions. Jesus knew he needed the healing power of God's love, and Jesus arranged things so that Peter would experience the healing power of God's love. First of all, he set the scene, and he made things for Peter as familiar as they could be. The scene was set in fishing. That's what Peter knew. He'd known it all his life. He'd grown up knowing about fishing. And so Jesus arranged the scene. It would take place after a fishing trip. But he did something else as well. He arranged it at a time when it would be an unsuccessful fishing trip, when they would have been hard at it all night and caught nothing. And it was to remind them of a situation that had existed before, much, much earlier in their encounter with Jesus. When Jesus had told them where to put the nets to catch lots of fish. And after the resurrection, Jesus meets them there in Galilee. And he does exactly the same thing. They don't know it's him. And he calls out and he says, "Have you caught fish?" And they say, "No, we've caught no fish." And he says, "Throw your nets over again, over there." And they say, "Look, we've been doing it all night. There's nothing out here." He says, "Just do it. Throw your nets in." And as they do, the nets are full of fish. So many they can't pull them into the boat. It takes two boats to get them back. And Jesus said, "Bring some of the fish you caught and we'll have a barbecue on the beach." And straight away, Peter's thoughts and those of the other disciples would have gone back to the incident before when Jesus had done virtually the same thing, enabled them to have a miraculous catch of fish and eat together. Everything Peter knew from the past in his relationship to Jesus was set out before him in that experience. It was familiar. It was something that was comforting to him and comfortable for him. And then, and only then, does Jesus ask him three questions. He says to him, "Peter, do you love me?" And Peter says, "Yes, of course, you know I love you, Lord." Nothing much to that question. It's a straightforward one. And then Jesus asks it again. "Peter, do you love me?" And Peter says, "I've just answered that question. Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. You know everything." And then a third time, Jesus says to Peter, "Peter, do you love me?" And Peter says to himself, he's asked me twice, he's asking me a third time, "Do I love him? Is that because he doesn't think I do? Because three times I said I didn't know him. And three times he's asked me if I love him. And he says, 'You know everything, Lord. You know I love you. You know everything. You know the three times I said I didn't know you. You know I was so full of myself and how I would never let you down and that I did. You know, Lord, all my failure. You know, Lord, all the things I got wrong. You know how full of shame, how full of guilt I've been. You know that I haven't even wanted that close encounter with you because I've been so full of my own failure. You know it all, Lord. Yes, I love you.'" And in the power of love, Peter is set free. Jesus had got to the heart of their relationship. In effect, he peeled off the plaster to get to the wound. Painful though it was, he wanted Peter to know that things were absolutely right between them. Nothing in the past holding him back, but the power of love healing him. And then Jesus can say, "Three times I have a new commission for you, Peter. You've got to feed my lambs, my sheep. Look after all of my followers. Teach them the way that I have taught you." This would be a big change for Peter. Leave the fishing, become leader of the church. And he couldn't do it alone. But the Holy Spirit would provide guidance and strength and the very words needed. But life would change for Peter in a big way if he accepted the challenge. And of course, he did. But Peter had to be prepared. You know, sunrises and sunsets, they're very similar, aren't they, in a way? This could be either a sunrise or a sunset. Happens it's a sunset. But of course, when the sun sets somewhere, it rises somewhere else, doesn't it? And we see the sunset and the sunrise, and it's a new day. We all like to know what lies ahead. These days, we can turn on the television, or we can go to our phones, or we can find in other ways what the weather's going to be like. Well, what they think it's going to be like, this being Great Britain, this being a changeable place. But in the old days, there was a saying, "Red sky at night, shepherd's delight. Red sky in the morning, shepherd's warning." Or they say it with sailors as well. In other words, if the sky is red at night, that predicts a good day the day after. If the sky is red in the morning, That's a sign of rain or bad weather to come. These days we don't really need such sayings. But such sayings help us. Warnings, weather warnings, help us to know what's happening before it does. And we like to know what's happening before it does. That's why the pandemic lockdown was so hard. It came as such a shock. We had no warning. We didn't have time to stock up on toilet rolls. Except for me, of course, who's always stocked up on toilet rolls. But we didn't have time, did we, to get all those things. Can you remember, some of you, going into the shops, if you're old enough to remember it, going into the shops and there was no toilet rolls and there was no pasta and there was all sorts of other things missing from the shelves as people thought, if we're going to be locked up in our houses, we need something to eat. We need basic essentials. I can remember one evening here, Sam coming to the Bible study on a Wednesday evening, and he'd been out to the supermarket with Lola, and they'd been looking, about three supermarkets, they'd been looking for toilet rolls and couldn't find them anywhere and had to buy kitchen roll in the end instead. Can you remember what a shock it was? Because suddenly the future wasn't predictable anymore. We couldn't count on the expectations that lay ahead. This is exactly what Peter is going to experience. And Jesus gives him a warning. He says, Peter, there will be change to come. Life will not carry on the same as it always has. Things will change. And it will not always be easy to follow me, Peter. Peter had denied even knowing Jesus. He'd been so scared of being arrested. But Jesus says, when you are old, that's what's going to happen to you, Peter. When you are old, you are going to be dressed by somebody else, or undressed as Jesus was. And you are going to face arrest and death. And on that day, you will be not be so frightened that you have to say you didn't know me. On that day, you will have the strength and the courage that you need to know that death will lead to life. So, Peter, do you love me? Follow me, says Jesus. Follow me wherever I lead you. Into all sorts of different things, all sorts of challenges, all sorts of changes, all sorts of things you've never experienced. But I will be with you, leading you every step of the way. Just follow me. Well-trained dogs know how to come, how to sit, how to stay. You might see in this picture there's Penny and right up ahead is Meg. Meg is wandering off doing her own thing, as she tends to do. Penny is at least looking back to see that I'm following while I stop to take a photo. This is not the way it should be with dogs. They should be following me, not me following them. But actually, they are within my earshot. Within earshot of me, and they would listen were I to call them. My dogs are moderately well trained. They do as they're told eventually. Sheep dogs, they are very well trained. They know that come by means you go clockwise and you go out clockwise, and sit or lie down or stay are absolute commands. And that away means you go the other way, you go anti-clockwise. They know commands and obey them and do as they're told. Police dogs, they know the exact pressure to put on the arm of a criminal to make them stop, but not to break their arm. Guide dogs for the blind, they know how to negotiate traffic, leading their handlers safely forwards, waiting at crossings until it's safe to cross. Help dogs, they know how to do all sorts of things. Some help dogs can take the washing out of the washing machine and tell their owners when somebody's ringing the doorbell and do all sorts of different things because they're trained to do so. They are willing helpers, but some also follow out of love and security. And that's my Penny, especially as she's getting old. She wants to know where I am. If I go upstairs, she can't do the stairs anymore. She lies at the foot of the stairs. If I go out, she's right behind the front door when I come back in. She's watching for me, seeing where I go, following me. Jesus said to Peter, follow me. An old command made new. Not just for the disciples in their old mode, their mode of learning from Jesus, being part of the exciting miracles that he did, impressing the crowds because they were part of Jesus' gang. Not in the old way. Everything had changed. Now Peter has to be prepared to follow Jesus with deep commitment, with obedience, even to places where he doesn't want to go. Peter knew what was being asked of him. So he deflected the question. I've seen plenty of people do that in my time. They're asked a question they don't want to answer, so they divert it. Jesus says to Peter, follow me. And as they walk, Peter looks back and says, look, there's John. What about him? Peter says, never mind about him. I'm talking to you. Follow me. You follow me. That is what I'm calling you to. As Jesus' disciples, we too are called to follow him. Whatever that may mean for us as individual Christians. But whatever it means, it does mean change. It means becoming different people. Not just once, but again and again and again. As we learn and as we grow and as we develop as Jesus' disciples. It means accepting that change. It means challenges. It might mean letting go of some of the past. Receiving his forgiveness. Starting afresh. There again. Sometimes it's again and again. It means allowing the power of God's love to be made known. Made known in Jesus and exerted by the power of the Holy Spirit. And allowing that love to fill us and to transform us and to work through us in the lives of others. But actually, we don't need to worry about any of that. We don't need to worry about where the change will lead us. We don't need to worry about what the change will mean for us. We don't need to worry about all those things. Because Jesus simply says to us, follow me. Trust in me. I am with you always. Come, follow me.